Welcome to Avenue Insights. Information relating to investment approaches or individual investments should not be construed as advice or endorsement. Any views expressed in this podcast are based on information available at the time and are subject to change without notice.
Welcome to our Q2 podcast for 2025. I think there's a couple podcasts what we're going to try to do, and there's sort of updates on markets and that kind of thing. But really, Brian, what you've been focusing on in writing this is just an incredible investment essay. And I think what I'd really like to do is we're just going to talk broadly about what it is and try to really, if we can excite a listener here today to go in and, you know, click on the letter and actually read the letter, because there's math in this.
We try to keep it simple, but
but it's really it's a great exercise in showing what are we looking for, why are we doing this, and so I'll just come right out like the you started with a Warren Buffett quote, you know, one of our great investors of all time, which we're trying to reinterpret to modern age and saying how inflation swindles the equity investor. But really that's the quote that you sort of frame the piece with, and really what the core of this essay though is goodwill and its amortization, the rules and realities, is an essay that Warren Buffett wrote in 1983. And this is this whole period of the 1970s and inflation, and when you have a business, how you actually survive and thrive through inflation. And I think we've been, you know, pretty clear for the last few years, we're now very much feel that we're in that period of time where if you have cash or you just can't have money sitting sitting in the bank or, you know, hidden under your mattress. This is, you actually have to have your money working. And then I'm going to throw it out to you, this idea of very clearly looking at businesses and comparing business and saying, this is a successful business in this environment. Mm-hmm. And these ones, as you said, it's, you know, mediocre. Or you said the term Buffett uses, a mundane business. So I just throw it to you, this idea, just also where the idea came from and why this quarter?
Yeah, well, it's an essay that was, like, as you mentioned, it was in his one of his annual letters from the early 1980s. And I had read it a few years ago. And I think what's interesting about a lot of Buffett's letters from that time is, if you think about Berkshire, he had taken it over in 1965. He spent the next 15 years investing through that very inflationary or stagflationary environment. And then through the 80s, each year, he slowly documents what he had observed and believed to be important traits of what would be a successful investment in a stagflation kind of time. And so I'd read it a couple of years ago, and I'd in the back of my mind sort of anchored that at some point, if there was a way to tie this messaging into either the current market or an investment in our current portfolio, that it would be a nice way to sort of tie it together. And then in May of this year, or I'd gone to Omaha last year to the Berkshire meeting. But in May of this year, he sort of very quietly at the end of his meeting said essentially he's retiring at the end of the year. And so I tried to take the essay and then sort of tie down the history of the meetings and then relate it to our current portfolio and a couple investments that are in there. But the key idea that he hits on and that we tried to highlight in the article is that the characteristics of businesses in periods of time where either inflation is higher or interest rates are higher are important to understand for investors, because over time, as inflation makes its way through the economy, at first it's slow and you don't see the impact across the board. But as years go on, the weight of certain companies' business models start to really show itself when either you can't raise prices because you're in maybe a regulated industry, or specifically with this article, we talk about businesses who require significant reinvestment in their business, that gets very challenged during periods of inflation because the cost of those reinvestments have gone up. And then comparing that or looking at businesses who don't need to make reinvestments and can actually grow profits through that period of time, and just sort of comparing the economics to what is an excellent business to own and then what is a mundane business, which is more challenged in this period of time. And then specifically we looked at one investment that we currently own and then an investment that we previously owned that had run into sort of deteriorating performance business-wise that we sold a couple of years ago. But it was a good opportunity, I think, to sort of compare those two. And there's a little bit of an accounting in the article, but it's, I think, hopefully well explained and a little bit easier
for you. Yeah, I think you did a beautiful job of actually laying out the numbers. And again, the whole point of this is to encourage everybody to go and take a look at the letter. So I think just for simplicity of time, we'll just go in and attack actually the Warren Buffett example, we'll go through that, and then we'll actually go through our example. I think in simple terms, and then again, encouraging people to go and look at the actual numbers, because it's very dynamic and very clear of saying, oh, this business, why it's going to do well. And again, it's we're not necessarily saying in this next 6 month period, this asset's going to do well, this stock is going to do well. It's really this backdrop that we find ourselves in of this, you know, inflationary, more and more debt in the system. We still have to have our money invested. And how do you get your money invested? And I just start with one definition first before we take on the example. But it's really, when we're talking about these tangible assets, which is the key part of a business has intangible and then tangible assets. And just how do we distinguish those two things?
Yeah, so the point that we're trying to highlight or look at is for, and we make it clear as well, specifically the intellectual exercise is focusing on non-resource businesses. So resource businesses we put into a separate category, but for non-resource businesses, tangible assets would be things like plants or machinery or vehicles or infrastructure or telecommunications network or anything that is physical that you can touch that is an asset that is operated by a business, that would be tangible. And then an intangible asset would be a website domain or a copyright or brand value in the consumer's mind or a certain distribution network or, you know, a certain geography in terms of your distribution network. So things that are not tangible that you can't physically touch but are part of the business and serve your customers, that would be in the category of intangible assets. And the important distinction is just in periods of inflation, non-resource businesses that have large tangible assets, they require significant investments to keep going and operate. Essentially, it's like if you think about a steam engine with coal going into the fire in the olden days, a tangible asset in periods of inflation, you have to shove more coal into the fire to keep that business running. And you're sort of running to stand still for a lot of asset heavy businesses that aren't resource based, because the costs of inflation compound over time. And what we tried to highlight in the article is looking at not just one or two quarters or even one or two years of financial statements, but very simply, like look over 5 years and you can see the negative impact that inflation had on one particular business. And then you can see how inflation benefited another investment that we have. And then it's just trying to frame that as a part of our process for these are the characteristics that we're looking for. And these are the characteristics that we're trying to avoid. And that's, we tried to lay that out in the article in a pretty clear way.
Right, so I think I'll just touch on the one example, the Warren Buffett example, because he's owned this candy company, See's. You know, I'm pronouncing it, See's spelled S-E-E apostrophe S. See's Candy as the, you know, really capital efficient, because once you build the plant, you can just drive more candy through it. And yes, the cost of the candy goes up, but the plant remains relatively
and you can raise prices
fit.
Critically. The important part is that for every and he said this famously many years, like basically every year they raise the price of candy, you know, 2 or 3%. But the amount of money that C's needs to have invested in it in tangible assets doesn't really rise. So you've been able to raise prices every year, and it's anyone who's been to Omaha or who has ever had C's candies, it's actually really good candy. But if you know, a thing of peanut brittle might cost $20 now, where they're very tactical about how they raise price. So if you go to Omaha or the meeting and the trade show, everything is charged at full pop, and you can sort of see, you know, the quality of the merchandise with C's is high, but the price is also expensive. And so every year, their argument has been that the brand value of C's is very high, and so that gives them the ability to raise prices without having to make substantial investments in the business. And so in an inflationary period like the 70s or like today, that is a scenario where profits can explode higher in at least nominal dollars, which is after inflation, because you're just able to raise prices every year. And so that's how he highlights great economics versus the mundane business that he talks about requires significant investment, and that's a huge drag from inflation.
And your rate of return. So rate so return, if I, yeah. So then going into our portfolio and the two examples, so now to, you know, to disclose that, it's really these we own Constellation Software. We do have one, you know, really great technology company that really fits for us, and Canadian company, and then compared it against BCE, and then again laying out those 5-year numbers. And again, just I think just for, you know, simplicity's sake, take Constellation Software and said in just brief description, this is software that if you're going into a dentist's office or a doctor's office or an accounting, this is their their accounting software or patient management software, and the software that you're never going to change, but you can probably incrementally raise prices, you know, through a decade, but there's no more fixed infrastructure that you need. Mm-hmm. So just sort of saying that with Constellation, how you've seen that business move over the last few years as we've owned it.
Yeah, we've owned it for over 5 years now, but at the time when we first looked at it, the question we had about the business was how much money could they could they raise prices, but how much money would be need to be reinvested versus how much money could they reinvest into buying new software. And as we worked through figuring it out at the time, we realized the ongoing reinvestment needs were almost nothing, and they had very low or very minimal tangible assets in the business. So and we thought if we had a period of inflation, they'd be able to raise prices. If they could make reinvestments by buying other software companies that would have attractive economics, then you could have sort of this compounding machine. And it's far surpassed our expectations from when we first bought it. But when you look at very simple financial statements for 5 years, you can see how the business has really benefited from periods of inflation. Or you could invert that and say it's protected its own investors from inflation because the business value has been able to keep up with inflation. And I think even I'm not sure how much of that revenue growth that we talk about in the letter is organic growth versus actually just acquiring new businesses. I still think the organic growth of the business is low, but it's their ability to compound and reinvest all of their profits that makes the economics so attractive. But when we then compare it to BCE, which we had owned after the pandemic and up until about 2 years ago, but they had, in this last quarter, finally got to a point of cutting their dividend. But when you look at the economics and the financials, it's interesting because they've very publicly made substantial investments in their 5G network, along with their competitors. But if you look at both revenue and cash flow or earnings for BCE, it's not grown at all in the last 5 years. So
I think in the very simple term, just coming right to the what we noticed a few years ago with is you can't pass on prices. Yes. Just weirdly in the telecom, you know, historical land-based line, which is declining, but even the cell phone, there's this political, you know, customer, you know, revolt against higher prices. And it just seems like all that made sense that they could just, you know, move their business along. Except they couldn't raise prices.
Yeah.
And it's just how you laid it out in the letter. It's just, it's dramatic how everything sort of flatlined. Your capital spending had to go up. And basically at the end of the day, you're making less money with more debt.
Yeah. And then you've cut the dividend, and they had, you know, we talked about in the letter too, they've sold MLSC, the Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. So you had this great asset, which you then had to sell, which then you're using to reinvest in the existing business. So the economics of it are challenging, but I would say 5 years ago when we had first owned BCE up until a couple of years ago, the challenging economics that inflation puts on the business were not clear because we had been following it and we knew it was a risk. But the difference also, you could think about, you know, the psychological feeling that you feel when you go, this is a thing that Buffett will say about See's candy, is that, you know, the feeling you get going to buy candy on Valentine's Day, or you go, you have a special occasion and you want to get a chocolate for your child. The feeling psychologically that you feel, and you almost forget about what the price is you're paying. But if your phone bill goes up $5, you can hit the ceiling, let alone if it goes up $50. So, and there's that dynamic where when you have a business that can raise prices over time, the economics are much more attractive than something like a BCE that can't. The challenge, and we get to this in the letter, is that a lot of investors know this. And so businesses like Constellation end up becoming very popular, and people are willing to pay a higher multiple for what they perceive to be a better business. And so that's always, it's probably the hardest part of what trying to understand once something has met our criteria for quality, coming up with an understanding or a framework to make decisions about valuation, given the quality, is challenging, because you could end up sort of over your skis if some businesses don't perform like you expect, but there's an acknowledgement that better businesses do trade at higher prices. And so, fortunate for our purchase of Constellation, we bought that in April 2020, so right after the pandemic. So it was a very attractive timing. But that's sort of a challenge that we wrestle with all the time, is how do we value these really good economics businesses? But it's as we kind of get to near the end of the letter, we argue it's more important to focus on these superior economics over time and hopefully be buying things at what we think is reasonable, because we think it's the economics that will weigh out over the long term. And economics through periods of inflation, like with the two examples, are starting to make itself very evident.
Great. Okay. I think that really nicely laid out. And again, I encourage everybody to look at the letters, because there's, and hopefully we can put some of the slides in this presentation. But it's great. Great essay about what we're trying to do every day and the challenges we face. But this is, when you have a success like this, feels really great. Thanks very much.
No, thanks. That's been great.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning into Avenue Insights. For more information, insights, or services, check out our website, avenueinvestment.com. Link in the description.